Artlist.io. Every single day I feel the pressure. Double up the work, let's make it extra. Working so my mother get a rest, yeah. Working like I never knew I'm best, yeah. Every single day I feel the pressure.
Welcome back to That One Studio. It's your boy C-Rock on the What Are You Made Of show. Welcome back, welcome back. I hope you've had a great life, great things happening for you since the last time we talked. And if you're new to the show, welcome. Thank you for being here. This show is all about the ingredients that have gone into making my guests who they are. It's called What Are You Made Of? And I'm just here to expose the secret, the hidden journey to success so that it inspires you so that you don't feel alone on your journey. And I have a great guest for you today. Another great guest, man. We're just stacking them up here. Jimmy Hunt's in the building. He's an adventurer, experimenter, Guinness World Record holder, and best-selling author. And he's here to share his mental fitness wisdom with us today. Jimmy, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Looking forward to having a chat.
I love it, man. I love it. We got talking before the show a little bit about where you're from and where you are. And man, I'd love to hear that story and all that. But before we do that, I got to dial this in the right way. And that's with the question, what are you made of?
Yeah, I mean, I like it. It's a good question because I just want to, when I sit down with people, that's what I want to know. I want to know what you're made of. I want to know what makes you tick. And, you know, when I came on the show, I was like, okay, well, what am I made of? And I'm definitely made of curiosity, massive amounts of that, adventure, like I can't stop. You will never stop me for the rest of my life going on adventures. And basically unshakable confidence, like there is nothing I can't do. And that's what makes me up. But I'm really trying to top myself up with some more love, compassion, and empathy, because those are things I never really grew up with and are things I'm really looking to sprinkle on top to make me even more awesome.
I love the self-awareness of that. You know, I mean, it's huge, because if you can measure those areas where you feel weaker or less experienced, less effective, you have the opportunity to act upon them, right? And sometimes people don't acknowledge and accept those things, so they can't act on them. And, yep. You know, my mentor told me those three A's. They said acknowledge, accept, and act. And, yep. And you know, that's huge. So I appreciate you saying that and sharing that. And that's vulnerable and transparent too, because a lot of people don't admit their areas where they feel like they need to work.
Well, with that though, like once you can see that, then when you get to the acting on it part, the key with the acting on it part is to be able to then record the results. Because if you're acting on it and nothing's really changing, well, then you might need to look on how you're acting on it. But if you're going to look on it and you can start seeing, hey, this is bringing more joy, more peace, more understanding, more effectiveness, and more efficiency to my life, then you can start double downing on that.
Yeah, yeah, 100%, man. Yeah, by the way, that means that we're playing a game and we're trying to keep score, because if you don't keep score, you have no idea how you're doing in the game. You know, I love it. So
exactly.
I'm very curious on something. You mentioned curious. What are you curious about?
What am I not curious about, Mike? Like literally anything that comes across. My problem is to trying to figure out how to prioritize my curiousness, because you can't be curious about everything. And I am. And so it's about, okay, what am I going to really focus in on that's going to provide results for the direction where I'm going? And so that's one of the things that most people don't really have an understanding of, is where are you going? What is it that you, who do you really want to be? And once you've figured that out, then you can start being curious about things that lead you to that particular place. And so, like, I want to be someone who's wise, someone who is compassionate, empathetic, and loving, someone who knows when to do the right things at the right time, someone who responds instead of reacts. And so when I understand who I want to be in this place, then I can start being curious towards things that help me become what I want to be.
Yeah, man. I like this. This is a good conversation. We're kicking it off here with Jimmy Hunt on the What Are You Made Of show. Jimmy, you also came from New Zealand. You live in Mexico now. Give us the story, man. Where did I, like, how did you get there? Like, what's the story, man?
Well, I mean, the story might be interesting for some, might not be for others, but I mean, quite simply, I don't like the cold, Mike. And so I've gone and lived in southern Mexico. So that answers that question. But one of the things that I do like is balance in my life. And so the ability to sit in the southern coast of Mexico and have a cost of living that is smaller than first world countries like New Zealand or America has allowed me to balance the work that I do to earn money compared to the work that I do to make myself better and to be of service to others. And so, like, I make most of my money speaking. So I travel around the world, I speak at conferences and events, and that's how I make my money. And I don't have to do that very often when I have a low cost of living. And so what it means, I have more time to think, more time to sit, more time to write, but then more time to be of service. Like, random examples, for the last 9 years, I have a sign, and it's, my sign says, chat with me, free advice, conversation, and listening. And by my house, I go down to the beach. It's a popular beach. And I sit there with that sign for about 9 hours a week. And I am just off service to people who need to ask some questions or need to dump some stuff or whatever. And being here allows me to balance that. And that is something that makes me very happy.
Is that mostly locals that come sit with you and talk to you?
Mostly tourists.
Tourists, okay.
Yeah, we get quite a few tourists coming through our town. And whilst, yeah, I do get some locals, it's definitely a lot of Mexico City people from around Mexico, Guadalajara, but also a lot of Canadian and American tourists and a lot of Europeans coming through as well. So it's a real mixed bag.
I got a crazy question for you. I never thought about this until right now.
Do you speak
Spanish, first of all?
Not well enough to be giving life advice.
Okay. Well, I was curious, like, if you start speaking Spanish, right, and you get pretty fluent with it, what a Spanish New Zealand accent sounds like.
apparently my Spanish accent isn't too bad, but I'm dyslexic and it's very hard for me to learn a new language. Whereas in the same amount of time, my wife is perfectly fluent, whereas I am just getting by. And so, yeah.
And where did you meet your wife? Did you meet your wife in Mexico or?
No, in New Zealand. We've been together 13 years. I've lived in Mexico for 7. Been doing the sign thing for 9, and I travel back and forth constantly.
How did that conversation go with the wife? Like, when you guys decided to move to Mexico, was that something that you both had wanted, or who brought it up first?
Yeah, no. So we both don't like the cold. So in the winter in New Zealand, which is not even cold where we live, like not even remotely cold, never snowed where I live or anything like that. Just, I'm really just soft. And so we would travel in the winter and we would go to India, Asia, America, Cuba. And then we ended up in Mexico. And we just found Mexico to be that really nice little in-between spot of developing in first world where you can kind of get everything you want. Amazon delivers to my door if I need a new keyboard for my laptop or whatever. But cheap enough to be able to really balance that life out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so let me ask you a question then. How did you get into this mental fitness arena? Like, what drew you? Like, how did you grow up? Was there some, you know, experiences you had when you were younger that you had to overcome? Like, where did it all start?
Yeah, my experiences when I was younger were beautiful. Beautiful family, beautiful life. Lovely humans. My decline into really bad mental health was a slow and misunderstood journey. And then I just ended up in this place where I was super depressed, anxious, suicidal, and I had no idea how I got here. No big traumatic, crazy thing, just a slow slide. And I just ended up realizing that I needed to make my tomorrow different from my today, because my today sucked. And so I decided that the biggest thing that I could do in that regard was go on an adventure. If I went on an adventure, then it would be different. And so I came up with an idea, and that was to take a $5 pool float. So, you know, the things that you'd lie on in a pool, like a mattress that you'd sip a cocktail on? Yeah, to swim one of those down New Zealand's longest river. And so I swam a pool float 300 miles down New Zealand's longest river. It took me 11 days. I spent 10 nights on the river, and I was broke at the time. I really had no idea what to do, but I was on this adventure. And so I needed food and I needed accommodation each night. And so the plan was very simple, scary as hell, but very simple. Each night I would get out of the river and I would go up to the nearest house and I'd knock on the door and I'd say, "Hey, my name's Jimmy. I'm just swimming your river out here. Could I please stay the night and have some food?" And I was so scared. And like, I won't lie, like every night I would spend about half an hour sitting on the banks of the river, like looking at the houses, trying to figure out which one looked the kindest. And I'd finally get up enough courage, go knock on the door, open it up. My friend and I were trying to guess, like, you know, sales. Like, how many doors do you have to knock on to get 10 sales, Mike? And we were like, oh, like 100. If I could get 10% conversion rate, I'd be good. And in the end, I had to knock on a grand total of 10 doors. Every single person opened up the door, listened to what I had to say, listened to what I was doing and why I was doing it, and said, "Sure, come on inside. This is what we're having for dinner. Wake up the next morning, make me some breakfast. Can I pack your lunch?" Holy moly, yes, please. And so wow. I really learned the kindness of humans in that adventure. And there was all, you know, all sorts of things came off the back of that. And we made a documentary for the main television network in New Zealand about it. I wrote a best-selling book about it. But like, the big thing I learned out of it is I wasn't alone in the way I was feeling, and that people were really willing to help if they were asked.
Wow. So did that have to do with the Guinness World Record? That journey? That was something different. Okay. So that was just one adventure. That's one adventure that you went on.
I have many adventures, Mike. But to get to that part, to segue there, once I swum that, people started asking me the question, "Well, what are you going to do next? Swim the Amazon?" And I was like, no, I don't really want to do that. And so I was trying to figure out like what I could do, because I did that 14 years ago. And back then, mental health was just not really talked about. And if it was talked about, it was in a negative sense. And so mental health had this very negative connotation about it, which was you were either mentally ill or you were mentally well. Those were your two choices. There wasn't really much in between. And I realized that mental health is actually a continuum. And it runs, you know, let's call it 0 to 100. And we're all somewhere on that 0 to 100. It's not just binary of well or not well. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I sort of came up with the understanding of mental fitness. And like, this is a thing that is just like physical fitness. I can ask you, "Are you fit?" And you say yes or no.
Well, it's binary.
And, and then you're like, "But what is fitness, right?" Mm-hmm. Like, are you David Goggins fit, or are you fit enough to play with your kids at the park? Like, what is fitness, right? And so that's what I sort of came to an understanding about with mental fitness, mental health in a fitness term, is like, well, how good are we actually? And the cool thing about fitness is you can always be fitter, right? You ask Goggins if he wants to be fitter. Yes, please. You ask some guy lying on a couch, "You want to be fitter?" Yes, please. And so the problem I had was that I wanted to tell the story. I wanted to share this idea and this framework, but the media doesn't give a shit. The media doesn't want to talk to you about mental health. They've got other things to sell. And so I needed to figure out a way that I could manipulate the media to allow me to talk about mental fitness and whatever it was I was doing. And so I woke up one morning, I turned to my wife and I went, "I'm going to build the biggest water slide in the entire world." And she's like, okay, because she's used to my big dumb ideas. And 4 months later, I had built a 601 meter, so it's 2,004 feet, completely inflatable, with about, was it 400 foot vertical drop, inflatable water slide that you can get up to like 35-40 mile an hour on. And I crowdfunded like $100,000 US in 3 days to make it happen from random people, and just put this whole big event together. And I generated $20 million worth of media coverage for that event worldwide, including I had 9 minutes on the Today Show in the US. 7 of those minutes I got to talk about mental fitness. 2 minutes we talked about the slide. And so I used it to manipulate the media in a way that allowed me to share stuff that actually mattered. Because I would only do the interview if I said we got to talk 50% about what I'm doing and 50% about why I'm doing it.
And how did you promote the crowdfunding initiative at first? Like where did you get that word out?
Put it on my social media.
Yeah, like Instagram and Facebook. Like,
yeah. So this is the thing. Like Seth Godin has a really great marketing analogy, which is good isn't good enough, great isn't good enough. It needs to be remarkable. And when you take that to the origin of the word, remarkable means to remark about, to tell people about it. And mm-hmm. So if it is a remarkable idea, people will talk about it. And my idea was remarkable. And so I had like 100,000, you know, social media followers already. And that was just disseminated by them and picked up by media, picked up. Because I just told them, like, send this to anyone you know in the media. And people just sent it, and it just went boom, 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 boom. And boom, I got my crowdfunding in 3 days.
Okay, so while you were going through this, like a lot of people probably don't ask this question, because I come up with good questions, Jimmy, by the way. I don't know if you figured that out yet or not. I'm just messing. But I am kind of true. But because you talked about what you're made of is confidence, right? And there's a guy named Brian Johnson that talks about anti-fragile confidence. And you mentioned extreme confidence. But while you're going through it, you still weren't sure it was going to happen. You probably entered it thinking, I'm going to accomplish this. What went through your mind emotionally and intellectually as you were seeing it start to blow up in those 2 days or 3 days?
Yeah. So like, I kind of do start everything with naivety, right? That's kind of the key, because if you start it with really looking at everything that needs to be done to actually build the world's biggest water slide, you'd never start. Right. So I just go into everything going, how hard could it be? Surely it can't be that hard. And I do that with anything. Yeah. I just laid a concrete slab out the back of my house this week. I've never laid concrete in my life. And quite simply, how hard could it be? You watch a YouTube video or two, and then suddenly now I've got a concrete slab out of my house, which was a lot harder work than I thought it would be, by the way.
Concrete I grew up pouring concrete.
Right. Yeah. But the point being, how hard can it be? And then having the stubbornness to make it work. And so, like there's obviously going to be times where you're like, holy moly, I've bitten off way more than I can chew. I don't know if this is going to work. And then the key factor in all of that is if you get to that space, you ask for help. Real simple. And you be honest and vulnerable about it. So before I built the world record inflatable one, personally, I had built a like half size, like a 1,000 foot slip and slide. And I had a bunch of people over and it wasn't working. Like it just wasn't working at all. And I had a bunch of people coming the next day who'd paid money to come to my random slip and slide, and it wasn't working. And the day before the event, I put on my social media, the slide is not working. I need an expert to come and help me. And this guy's like, I know a little bit about slip and slides. And he came out and randomly, like he comes out, he goes, I know what the problem is. I said, what? He said, too much water. I was like, what? No, not enough water. He's like, no, too much water. It's actually slowing you down. The less water you have, the more you slide over it, the faster you go. I was like, oh. So I turned the water way down, boof, off my slip and slide went. But it required me to drop my ego, to be vulnerable, and literally post to all of the people that would, you know, they would see it, that were coming, holy moly, this guy doesn't know what he's doing and it isn't right. But then, boom, because of that, it became right. And because of that, it was a massive success.
So what, in that point right there, okay, everybody out on social media right now, and I did a post the other day on my story because I was just hit me. I'm like, there's a lot of people that embellish, lie about their success in their business as entrepreneurs or whatever they're doing. And they never, ever share their faults.
Yeah.
Some people do. They'll share their faults or failures after they overcome them, which is fine.
Yeah.
But they, people... And then, so now here's what happens, Jimmy. Everybody gets on social media and they're looking at it and like, oh man, so-and-so's doing that. And I'm having trouble in my business. And I'm having like these challenges and I can't, I'm not overcoming them. I'm filled with anxiety. And this goes to the mental fitness part. So people are feeding into this insecurity by lying on their success. I'm lying, meaning fibbing or embellishing or exaggerating or what have you. Yep. And so it's, can you speak to that as the importance of people that are scrolling social media or look at, and they see this stuff? They're looking for answers. A lot of people go to social media looking for answers for mental fitness, right?
Yep.
And then what's the word I'm looking for? Counterfeits them because they see this other stuff and the comparison kicks in. Thoughts?
Yeah. Well, that's the sense. So you know, the last word you said there is a massive thing that goes through. So comparison culture. Right. So we are always naturally as humans going to compare ourselves to people we think are on or close to our level. And all of these people are literally only showing you the absolute best parts of their life. And we are comparing our entirety versus their cream at the top. And so we are always going to fall short of that. And it is disingenuous. And when you look at 1 million social media people, you've got one person who's actually saying, right now, I'm messing up. And one of the big things that I believe just personally is that I'm no better than anybody else. And nobody's any better than me. We're all just people on our journey. And so if I just share, hey, I'm not doing well at the moment, I'm struggling with this, I want to work as a community to be able to lift each other up. Because all of these people talk about my community, right? But technically, it's not a community. It's a leader speaking down to a group of people. A community is people that talk together to lift each other up. And so I think there's a lot of power in social media for any influencer or anyone who's trying to be anyone or do anything to try and lift everyone up to your level without fear of them overtaking you or stealing your business or anything like that. Lifting them up to your level, and you do that with shared vulnerability. Shared vulnerability equals connection. And that's why, without even thinking about it, right at the very start, it is just second nature for me to say, yeah. And so I'm working on love, empathy, and compassion at the moment because I didn't have enough of that growing up, right? And I don't feel bad about that. What I get more than anything else is, oh, man, me too. Like, that's what I need to work on. What have you been doing? And then they opt in to learning from me. Because I'm learning the same thing they're learning, just a couple of steps ahead.
So how do you avoid trauma bonding when you're vulnerable and transparent with people with what's going on in your life? Because and should we avoid trauma bonding? Is trauma bonding a bad thing? I don't even know.
No, it is. And well, the problem is trauma identifying, right? So when people start taking their traumas as their identity. And you can, like, one of the cornerstones of mental fitness is the ability to observe your thoughts, right? So there's a difference between being your thoughts and observing your thoughts. And so the ability to observe your thoughts is basically the cornerstone of meditation, for example. So to close your eyes, to have thoughts come up, to observe them and to let them go. Now, a very, very simple example of this is when you say, I am angry, right? Well, then if you say that, you are. Congratulations. I am angry. I am depressed. I am happy. Yes. There's a saying which is, I am, the two most powerful words in the universe, because what you say after that creates your reality. I am angry. Yes. Now I'm going to act like I am angry. Whereas the observation of your thought is, I am currently feeling really angry. Puts a time frame on it. It puts an observation on it. And then you can start responding instead of reacting. Because when you're angry, you fall straight into a reaction. Sympathetic nervous system state, fight, flight, freeze, reaction. When you go back and observe it, you can stay in your parasympathetic nervous system state and you can respond for what best serves you in that moment. And wow. That is the same for identity. I am depressed. I am. Yes, then you are. Like I will never use those terms when I'm explaining what's going on with me. Like I'm currently struggling with X. And I would love somebody's help to help move me through or inspire me through or just give me a kick to be able to move through. And hopefully they can inspire you as well. Or maybe when I do it, I can then tell the story of how they inspired me to allow it to come through.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Yeah, I talk about this a lot about finding out who you are. And I want to cover this with, since this is aligned with what you're just talking about. Mental fitness has a lot to do with knowing who you are and not identifying what you just talked about with what you do. Like yeah. not necessarily the emotions, but your profession, your career, your, you know, yeah. and a lot of veterans yeah. and football players and sports athletes and all that, they and entrepreneurs, right? Corporate executives, they'll identify with what they do. And I did this. And then when that thing goes well, you're up here. When it goes down, you're down here. And yeah. so how important is it and where can people start to really identify massive. With who they are versus what yeah. they do.
Yeah, massive. So in New Zealand, you may or may not know, our national sport is rugby. And even though we are a very small nation, we're the best in the world at it and have been for a long time. And we're very good at cricket as well, not an American sport, but a massive sport around the world. And we have a lot of very good professional athletes. And I deal with a bunch of them who retire. So this is the same with NFL yep. or anyone else. Since you are 5 years old, I am a football player. That is who I am. And then you retire and you're not a football player. And so the question is, who the hell are you?
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's very, very crazy for a lot of people who don't understand. And it could be any sort of identity. The question is, if I strip everything away from you, if I take that hat and that shirt off you, if you can no longer be an entrepreneur, like if I take all of the stuff away from you, what is left? Who are you, right? And this goes back into the question of who do you want to be? And so that is not what do you want to achieve, right? So who do you want to be? So you want to be someone who's maybe a good father, a good family man. Maybe you want to be someone who's really connected with their friends, who is of service to others, who you know is generous with their time, energy, and money. Like these are things that are worth aspiring to be, right? Whereas if you aspire to be a football player, you can be a rapist or a murderer or a thief or a liar, but still have achieved being a professional football player. And we see that in all sorts of sports, right?
Yeah.
And so that's why we've got to ask, who do we want to become and not what do we want to be? A good example, in almost a decade ago, I wrote a best-selling book. This is in one calendar year. I wrote a best-selling book. I opened TEDx Auckland in front of 2,500 people. I fronted a national ad campaign for the biggest company in the country. I built the world's biggest water slide. I was a finalist for New Zealand Innovator of the Year for the design of my giant inflatable water slide. And I was a finalist for New Zealander of the Year for my work in mental health. And at the end of that year, I was still sad. I was sad that the book hadn't sold enough copies. The water slide didn't raise enough awareness. I didn't win New Zealand Innovator of the Year or New Zealander of the Year. And my TED Talk didn't get enough views. Like, genuinely not happy at the end of that year because I was only focusing on what I wanted to achieve and not who I wanted to become. And so this is the big key in creating mental fitness is if you take away my job from me, if you take away my wife from me, if you told me I'm never allowed to go on an adventure again, if you took away all of those things, I could honestly tell you with all of the work I've done over the last 15 years, I'm going to be okay.
Man, it's huge, man. It's huge. And would you say an identity is more of a description than what you do versus what you do?
Oh, yeah. Like what you do doesn't matter. In the grand scheme of things, right? So one of my favorite quotes in the entire world is you cannot overestimate the unimportance of practically everything. In the grand scheme of things, practically everything is unimportant. This podcast is practically unimportant in the grand scheme of things, right? Mm-hmm. Your husband, your wife, practically unimportant in the grand scheme of things. The job you do, the football score, the car you drive, unimportant in the grand scheme of things. And so then you get asked the question, well, okay, then what is important? And quite simply, you, Mike, you are the most important. And everybody listening, you are the most important. If you work on figuring out who you want to become, figuring out the perspectives, the understandings, and the tools that allow you to increase your mental fitness, you will become a better human. You'll become a better father. You'll become a better husband. You'll do better work. You'll become more efficient, more effective. You'll be able to afford a better car. That doesn't matter. Right? But it all comes back to doing the internal work to improve your mental fitness so that everything else falls into place outside.
Deep, man. We're talking some deep stuff here with Jimmy Hunt on the What Are You Made Of show. Guys, I could go on all day talking about this stuff, and this dude's pretty awesome if you haven't figured that out already. Jimmy, as we wind down here, I want to just mention you have a podcast, and that podcast is, one that I'm sure you're talking about mental fitness, right? Can you tell us the name of the podcast and then what has podcasting done for you?
Yeah. So it's called Inside Out with Jimmy Hunt. And basically it's a three episode sort of recurring series. The first episode is me talking about a mental fitness topic that I've learned about that's made me a better human and me sharing that with you. And my wife helps me. She doesn't know what the topic is. She comes in and sits there and I tell her about it. And she's like, I don't understand that. What does that mean? And then I have to explain it. And so she plays devil's advocate to me in that. The second episode, I talk to someone just like you or someone who is an expert in the mental fitness, mental health, psychology, psychiatry, counseling, alternative therapy, whatever it is, that might be able to help my listeners become better humans. But here's the interesting thing, and I realized this a little late on in my career with this, is that in New Zealand, we have this, it's a long story, a whole thing, but basically I could get these stats, and it showed why these people were allowed to go, chose to go and use this free therapy inside of businesses. It's a New Zealand law mandated thing. And the majority of people, like above 60% of people in all of these companies, the reason that they use this free therapy was for external relationships at home. And so every third episode is me and my wife talking about our relationship or our relationship with our friends and how to connect better and how much of a big part that plays in making a happy human a happy family and a happy society. And so podcasting, to answer your final question there, has done a lot for me in regards of clarifying my own thinking, because I have to present on this, so I better think this through so that it helps a lot of people. It's made my relationship with my wife better, because we kind of just have interesting communication on the episodes that we do together. And as we've talked about before this podcast started, one of the coolest things is you get to talk to cool people, and then you get to make new friends around the world. And you get, if you are a good human, you connect with them, and then they help you become a better human moving forward. And that's what I love.
Huge, man. Huge. Man, Jimmy Hunt, you're my guy, man. I like you. Not that you care, not that it matters. You don't need my validation. I'm just sharing that with you because I really enjoyed this conversation today. And I don't know if, you know, if people can tell sometimes when I'm really deep into listening. And so I hope you can appreciate that. Folks, Jimmy Hunt has been here to share what he's made of. We appreciate you, Jimmy Hunt. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Hold tight while I wrap this up. Guys, thank you so much for listening. It means the world to me that you come in here, whether you're listening or watching, however you're consuming this content. It's your boy C-Rock here. I just want you to be that one and keep going after it. Find out who you are. Lean into it unapologetically. And until next time, be unstoppable.